Rick Mahn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, TNT Radio, locked and loaded, that's what we are. This is hour number two of today's show. If you missed the first hour, it mightn't be such a bad thing. It's a little bit hard and heavy. No punches were pulled. The language almost, they are almost turned blue on a few occasions. Yeah, a lot of finger pointing and finger waving and fist shaking went on with Mr. Kevin Loughray, in a good way, of course, talking about social injustices, talking about miscarriages of justice, travesties of justice, the lack of justice. But anyway, before I, raise my next patient from the dead, because he's been a little bit poorly over the last few days. And yeah, he almost didn't make it today. But, you know, we have a policy here in TNT Radio that only death is the only acceptable excuse for not doing an interview with me. So Nick is thankfully still vertical. He's breathing. He may not be very comfortable. He may have a bit of a temperature, but respect is due to Mr. Nick Corbishley for coming on air today to talk to me. Before I launch into what I want to say with him, just want to look at some news items that are making the front pages today. Inflation, strangely enough, pushes UK government interest costs to a May record. This is something we've been parping on about here since the start of the year. We were called doom merchants. The American federal people were saying, no, don't worry about inflation. It's not so bad. It's a blip. It's not going to get worse. It's not going to be a recession. It's not going to happen. And we said BS, and we were criticized for it and called doom mongers and the pessimists. It's happening. All right. We're not rocket scientists. We're simple people who can connect the dots and see trajectories, all right? And it's going to get worse. You don't like that? That's reality. I say it not to depress you, but to encourage you to get your finger out of your ass and make some preparations for what is definitely coming, which is a big financial squeeze and a big shortage of consumables. I've been saying it for a year. I'm going to keep saying it, prepare, because someday you're going to tune in and go, huh, I've got nothing in the cupboard. I can't get this. I can't do that. Listen, we can't dodge this. We can't avoid this. This is a storm and we're all going to be hit by it, but we can prepare a little bit to reduce the effects on our individual lives. So inflation is pushing UK government interest rates to a record high in May. What else is happening? Something a little bit lighthearted, because we don't want to depress you completely to hell and back. Northeast of England, pigeon racers say post-Brexit rules have been devastating for their sport. In the UK, I don't know about America or anywhere else in the world, but we have people who their hobby is to race pigeons. Literally, they have a loft in their back garden or a shed. They keep pigeons in it. They release them. They fly around the place and they come back again. They tag them and monitor them and they race the pigeons. And my dad dabbled in that. My grandfather dabbled in it. It's like a family thing. I never partook of it. I'm not a pigeon racer. But let's just say this. The Northeast pigeon racers have said they are devastated by post-Brexit rules. Whether you go Brexit, whether you don't go Brexit, there's pain and suffering there one way or the other. Network rail strike, second 24-hour walkout after talks collapse. Services grind to a halt on the second day of industrial action in the UK. There's a rail strike. They don't like the pay. And yeah, allegedly going to be joined by doctors, barristers, teachers, bin men, and on and on and on over this summer. It could be the summer of strikes. It could be the summer of love, but it's highly unlikely. I have a lot to talk about with this next guy. I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to inhale. And I'm going to tell you that we'll be right back after this short break on TNT Radio.
Stay in the loop all day.
And the only radio station that helps me through a long day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Nick Corbishley is in the house. Mr. Corbishley, sir, how are you doing today? I want to believe you're feeling a little bit better. How are you, sir?
Hi, Rick. Top of the morning to you. Not so bad. Not so bad.
Good.
I feel I'm on an upward trajectory, to borrow from a word you used in the last minute or two. Things are going better than they were a few days ago. And this particular brush with COVID is nothing compared to the first one. So there's room for optimism, I suppose.
Exactly, exactly, my friend. And listen, people get sick, whether it be A, B, C, or D. People sometimes don't make it. People sometimes do make it. The bottom line is our bodies are strong. You seem like a fit and strong young man. When I say young man, I don't mean that in a patronizing way, but I'm assuming you're younger than me. So yeah, it's a compliment. You look after yourself. I'd say you've got a little bit of common sense between those 2 years of yours. And yeah, you let nature take its course, which I think is what we should have been doing all along. And I know you agree with that. It's nice to see you again. Just for a little bit of background for our lovely listeners out there, you can follow Nick on Twitter at Nick Corbishley, Corbishley on Twitter. And he also has a website, nickcorbishley.com. He has a lot of written output there. He focuses really on Latin America. He's living in Spain as well. So he has his views on what's going on. He's well positioned to talk about what's happening in Europe as well. He's an author and a journalist. He wrote a book called Scanned: Why Vaccine Passports and Digital IDs Will Mean the End of Privacy and Personal Freedom. That is available either through his website, nickcorbishley.com, or on Amazon to buy. And I know some of my guests have bought that book and have read that book. And in fact, the last time you were on was with Mr. Indy, Seek for Truth. And he actually said, I need to get the finger out and read that book before I come on and speak with Nick. So yeah, your reach is far, my friend. You're hitting some nails on the head, and that's good to see.
Thank you for that lovely, lovely introduction, Rick. And good advice from Seek for Truth. Definitely give the book a read. It's not like it's going to take forever to get through. It's a short read. It's about 150, 160 pages. And like you said, I think that some nails were hit in the process of writing that book. And we're seeing that more and more, even just over the last week. As I've been convalescing, I've seen more and more examples of certain warnings that I make in that book beginning to kind of like come true. So it's, yes,
yeah,
it's
they're materializing before our very eyes.
They are materializing. And I think that's a good thing for me as a writer to see. And it's a bad thing for the world in general, because it's not the brightest of books. But I think that, you know, there are lots of things happening right now that should, at least for those of us who have been concerned about the general course of direction, I think that, you know, we can now say, look, this is happening. And those people who were kind of consigning us to the sidelines, or even treating us as so-called conspiracy theorists, I think they can maybe begin to show a little bit more regard for what we said. Hopefully that will happen.
For sure.
Hopefully.
Tell me this. I mean, like, I want to look at some of the things that you've just said there. Balance is really important. Okay. So that book of yours, as you said, you know, if all I ever read was your book Scanned and I read it every single day, that would be bad for me, I think, no disrespect, because it's just bum, 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 right? But if I read it and digest it and then take steps to mitigate what you warn about, then it is a very positive thing, and it is something that is absolutely worthwhile doing. Okay, so it's a bit like being online. I think people, well, I'm speaking for myself, I spend too much time online. I have massively reduced that since the beginning of June. I'm out of the house more. I'm walking more. I'm listening to more music. So what I try and do is I try and be precise. I come on to do this show, and when I finish, I'm out of here. Okay, I'm going out, I'm going to walk, and then I'll do a little bit of prep for tomorrow, on and off all day. So I don't labor on one thing for too long. If I did, it would depress me, okay? Because there's a lot of stuff happening at the minute, as you know, with, you know, with the economy, with conflicts, with food, imminent food shortages, with, you know, Sri Lanka collapsing. Literally yesterday it was declared that we're gone, we're bust with nothing left and nobody's going to lend us anything or give us any fuel. It's hell. And Ecuador's not too far behind, I believe. They've had a lot of uprisings this week as well. You know, it's bad in India, Pakistan. It's getting closer and closer to home. We can't control that, but we can be aware of it. And like I said, you know, if anybody's listening to me today or listening to you, I'm hoping that they realize there's something coming and that they can mitigate the damage, not avoid it, but certainly mitigate it versus doing nothing and pretending, oh, everything's fine and everything's going to be back to normal before you know it. You have to balance reality, pessimism and optimism. It's a difficult thing to balance. Do you not think, as a journalist, as a writer, immersing yourself in this, do you not find that you need to step away or it will do your head in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Otherwise, I wrote my book in about 3.5 months and it was the most intense, exciting and depressing experience I probably ever had, because every day I had to go deep into this dark void, this vortex of pretty nightmarish things, and you need to be able to take a step back. Since I finished writing the book and after the promotion of the book, I am taking a much deserved kind of breather. I'm working at less than I was. Like you, I'm trying to devote more time to the pleasurable things in life, as well as keeping an eye on what's going on. This is vital for basic personal mental health. And life is about balance. We always need balance. And this is just as important. If you spend 12 hours, 13 hours a day looking at depressing news, you're not going to have the most pleasant of dreams when you go to bed at night.
No.
It's going
to... And you're not going to be a nice person to be around. You're not going to be a nice person to be around. Because, you know, your wife might say to you, hey, Nick, how's things? You're like, oh, man, you're not going to believe the inflation figures today. You're not going to believe what's happening. You're not going to believe that they're talking about launching ICBMs against England by the end of the year and reducing them to a pile of rubble. You know, your family don't want to hear that. Maybe they do in passing conversation. But you can become this almost like a bot. A truth bot, and that's not necessarily a good thing, because you're zoning out the real world and you're zoning out your own mental health for the sake of spewing out the truth like a machine gun, and that's detrimental, I think, to you personally or to me personally, but also to the people in our circle. And ultimately, you can't continue like that. You'll break down.
Absolutely. It's always about balance, and I think you work better when you have that space that allows you to see different perspectives. On a daily basis, I take my dog for a walk 3 or 4 times. That gets me out. It gets me in contact with people in the neighborhood. It just keeps you grounded. And we all need that sort of thing, whether it's meditation, whether it's Tai Chi, whether it's yoga, whether it's sports, whatever. We just need to keep our minds on an even keel, even as the world goes to shit in a basket.
Because what can you do about that ultimately, other than tell people you know, your unbiased opinion, which is at the end of the day is an opinion. You throw it out there and it doesn't matter if the world disagrees or it doesn't matter if the world agrees to it. You're simply speaking your mind and you're putting it out there. And if people want to argue about that, you know, that's another thing, is pointless arguments on the internet. I mean, they accomplish zero. I do not get drawn into debates with anyone. Like, there was a thing I put up this week about chemtrails, and I'm not getting into that topic, but as an example, it's like, okay, there's debate raging. Are they real? Are they condensation? Is it poisoning? Blah, blah, blah. So I said, well, listen, let's look at the world. Okay, they're putting aluminium in your deodorant. You know, they're putting carcinogens in baby powder. They're injecting billions of people with toxic substances into their arms that are passing their blood-brain barrier. They're poisoning the water supply. They want to put fluoride in it and toothpaste. We know all that. That's not... So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they would be spraying something toxic in the air. However, let's say they are. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it after you've deduced that it's a government poisoning? Are you going to stop the flights? If we can't stop them injecting children in schools, you ain't going to stop a plane flying over your head, dumping ammonium or aluminium nitrate into the air. You just got to get on with life. And when you see a plane, you might want to take cover. That's about as much as you can do, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you've got to choose your battles.
Correct.
And we've only got as much time and as much energy as we get. And at the end of the day, the best ones, in my view, the best battles to fight are the ones that are clearly based on well-founded evidence and that we know are happening. And I would argue that things like the three or four huge global social experiments or physical experiments we're going through right now, whether it's with the vaccines, with the vaccine passports, with digital identity, with the central bank digital currencies, those are enough, I think, to keep ourselves busy. Like you said, it's everybody has their pet, the thing that most fascinates them, the thing that most drives them, the thing that most interests them. But I think the worst thing we can do is get kind of locked down in arguments with people who should more or less be on our side, because it's just a complete and utter distraction from the more important things.
It is. Yes. It is. I agree with that. And I mean, what's the purpose of where I'm going with this? You know, this isn't scripted or planned either. I'm just sort of freestyling it with you, which is what I like to do. And that's another strange thing. Ironically, I have found, and I'm just sharing personal experience here, I've started to prepare a little bit less for talking to people. Okay, now, not because I'm lazy, not because I don't have the time, but I find if I try and make it too in-depth and too structured, then it takes away from having a conversation with someone. It's like, okay, we'll have to move on quickly because I want to talk about this. We'll have to move on quickly because I've done research on this. We'll have to move on quickly. It's good to just speak because then it's almost like you mentioned Tai Chi and meditation. For me, this is like a therapy session every day. I do a 3-hour therapy session every day on air. I dump all my thoughts and opinions out there. And people can take them or leave them, but I feel a little bit lighter when I finish. I'm very tired. Mentally, I'm burned out, but I feel lighter somehow. I feel like I've unloaded a burden off my shoulders, and that's a therapeutic thing to do. So find your outlet and use it, and don't go too hard. It's like an engine in a car. You drive everywhere in first gear at 6,000 revs per minute. That thing's going to blow up. All right, you need to sometimes put it in neutral, sometimes park somewhere at a nice park and get out, go for a walk with your dog 4 times a day. Strangely, I've been trying to get back into the routine of doing 10,000 steps a day, every day. And in the month of June, with one day, what are we at now, the 23rd, with one exception, I've done it every day, breaking it down a few thousand in the morning, a few thousand in the afternoon, a few thousand every night. And it's now becoming habitual, and it's doing me mentally and physically, it's doing me a lot of good. Someday I'll look as fit and healthy as you, but I'm working on that.
You do realize I have got COVID-19.
Yeah, but you look good, man. You look good. You look good. I look a little bit wretched.
That is
compared
very
to
good
you.
Of you to say. That is very good of you to say. Our minds are ultimately supported by our bodies. Our bodies need to be in pretty good fettle to be able to have a functioning mind. And I think that if there's one thing that I've learned from the last 2.5 years, it's that we've got to try to keep our bodies in reasonable shape. And while enjoying the pleasures of life, that such as wine and beer every now and then. And I do think balance is key.
Balance is key to
a good life.
The next guy, by the way, just on another tangent, the next guy that's coming on is he moved from New York area down to Florida. His name is Matt Izzo. And the only reason I get him on here is we've never talked about geopolitics. We've never talked about anything other than mental health, all right, and physical health and general well-being and setting goals and staying motivated. He's actually on straight after you. And When I was trying to construct this little show that I have, I always wanted to have an element of it that wasn't related to, you know, the hardcore stuff, the mm-hmm. deaths and the wars, etc. Because it's nice for people just to hear, okay, how can I stay motivated? I want to know how to stay motivated. I want to know how to get out of a rut. I want to know how to keep going when I feel like quitting. I want to know how to overcome hurdles, you know, whether they be mental hurdles or physical hurdles or weight loss or gaining muscle or competing in sports. And he's coming on after you, strangely enough, and that's all he and I are going to talk about. And I can actually sense you're kind of chilled out now. You know, you can tell, I can tell a guest by their body language. You know, you're leaning back a little and you're putting your arms up. I think you're quite relaxed now. Would that be a first statement?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm relaxed because I've been through COVID for the second time and I'm still alive. And I think I'm in reasonable health. My wife, the same. We, neither of us have had the vaccine. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time we went through COVID, we were one of just about the only people we knew in Barcelona, where I live, that were unvaccinated. And when we caught the virus, so many people around us were absolutely convinced that we were going to drop dead or we were going to be permanently disfigured, maimed, injured by some form of long-term effects from the virus.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened. And we now know that the second time round, it's not as bad as the first time round. So I'll tell you something interesting. The first time around, because I'm asthmatic, on around about day 9, day 10, my oxygen levels went down to about 91, something like that, 92, 91. And my wife and my father back in the UK insisted that I phone the ambulance. We phoned the ambulance just so that I went into hospital to get observation, to be put under observation. Eventually the ambulance came. I was put under observation in hospital for 3 hours. They did just about every test they could and everything came out well. Everything was good. Doctor says, you know, you're in fine fettle. My wife and I had been taking like lots of extra things to improve our body's chances of getting through the experience. One of the interesting things the doctor said to me is like, if you could take away one of the symptoms you are currently suffering, just like that, just clicking his fingers, just like that. He said, which one would it be? And I said, I thought about it for a moment. I thought, is it the cough? Is it the headaches? And I said, in the end, no, the fever. I'd had like 8 days of fever. I said, I'd love to have no fever. And he just brought me a prescription to take that. I went home. The next day I went to the pharmacy, picked up a prescription, took the medicine he had prescribed for me, and within 6 hours, fever was gone and never came back. So this time round, same thing happened, started to get a fever around about 38.5, took my paracetamol just to see what happened, did nothing. The next day I took this medicine and I haven't had a fever since. So I mean, like, it's like you were saying before, information is really important to be informed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And information is power. I'm just staggered that just to hear this doctor say, whichever symptom you want, which would you like to disappear just like that? And it's like, you know, that just suggests to me that maybe, you know, whatever condition you're in with this virus, the doctors probably give us more things than just the paracetamol that we are being told to take, which is not good enough when the symptoms become more serious. So it was a learning experience.
That was, and plus, just to wrap this little segment up, you also, I suppose, would be a walking testimony to the power of the immune system in that you and your wife were the only people that you were aware of in Barcelona that weren't vaxxed. And all eyes were almost on you per waiting for a bad result, waiting for, they're not vaccinated. They might die. They might get critically injured or they might have long lasting effects or be twisted out of form. No, you're both up on rail. Granted, you had a rough time of it, but you recovered. So in a way, the after effect of that is that, well, people will maybe think twice, will say, well, he didn't get vaccinated and he did have it and he's recovered from it. So, you know, there's a bonus. There's a little silver lining in that old dark COVID cloud that hung over the Corbishley home earlier on this year and recently. And like I said, testimony again. you're on air today talking to me, so it's good to see and it's good to hear. We're going to take a quick break, Nick, and when we come back, I do actually want to look at what's been happening in Sri Lanka, because we did talk about this a few months ago. We highlighted the fact that they were into a period of extreme stress financially and in terms of their infrastructure, and it seems to be that has reached its final end this week, in the words of the new Prime Minister for Sri Lanka. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after the break on TNT Radio.
You should hear what James Breslow is talking about.
And in the hands of this president or in the hands of the drug cartel. I mean, it seems like there's no business that they are not associated with. I mean, they're really, if people want to think about a comparison, just think about the mafia in New York, you know, where they control neighborhoods and so on. And, you know, protection money. They're going around to businesses and basically saying, if you don't want your business lit on fire by someone, we'll protect you. Just pay us every week.
That's what's happening.
I mean, in order to do business in Mexico, you are doing business with the cartels. Perhaps except for maybe the largest corporations, perhaps, right? But anything below the largest corporations, wouldn't you say?
Right. Even them, they're not safe. But, you know, if you have a CEO of a large corporation, that guy's going to have to hire bodyguards for his children to go to school, because he'll kidnap one of them and they'll ask for a large ransom.
James Breslow on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
How about some good news? There is a cure for hepatitis C. A simple blood test will tell you whether or not you have hepatitis C. More than 9 out of 10 people who receive highly effective treatment are cured and less likely to develop liver cancer or liver complications. One little blood test and you'll have done your part to help eliminate hepatitis C for good. Get tested, get treated, get cured. Visit hep.org for more information.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Government is no longer working to protect our shared heritage, institutions, culture, and way of life. We're watching their deliberate destruction and dismantling, ready for replacement with something else.
What might that be?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I'm in conversation with Nick Corbishley, who is an author and a journalist. He is the author of a book called Scanned, which we were discussing briefly earlier on, why vaccine passports and digital IDs will mean the end of privacy and personal freedoms. And in his own words, you know, he labored hard in that book for a period of 3.5 to 4 months. He threw everything into it, and it was a very draining project because he had to focus on things that were not particularly pleasant to focus on. Nonetheless, they have to be addressed because this is what's going on in the background that could potentially lead to worse times that are ahead. So we also discussed balance. We need to keep an eye on how much time we're spending on the more depressing things in life and make sure we make time for our actual real life families and friends and address the needs in the real world rather than just be obsessing with speaking the truth constantly online. Which also has its part, by the way, and I do it, and I'm sure you guys do it too, but we need to make sure that the balance is kept under check. Now, one thing that I did want to talk to him about in this little segment is we've talked in the past about Sri Lanka, and I believe it's going to be a case study for what's going to be coming to other places. So as per yesterday, Wednesday, 22nd of June, Sky News ran a piece called Sri Lanka Economy Has Completely Collapsed, says the leader of Sri Lanka. The country of 22 million people is struggling with its worst economic crisis in 7 decades. And note the interest rate rises that are being bandied about all across the world, the inflationary rates that are bandied about. This story talks about the worst in decades after decades after decades. It's not a short-term problem. It's not something that's just a blip. This is crisis, especially in Sri Lanka. So the PM, Ranil Wickremesinghe, has said the country's economy has, quote, completely collapsed, leaving it unable to pay for essentials such as oil imports. It follows months of shortages of food, fuel, and electricity, which is what we have talked about in the past. And the realization, now here's the key word, realization, that even if the credit lines from neighboring India have sustained the country so far, it will not be enough. They are at breaking point as per right now. So the PM told Sri Lanka's parliament, we are now facing a far more serious situation beyond mere shortages of fuel, gas, electricity, and food. Our economy has completely collapsed. That is the most serious issue before us today. And lastly, he said the state-owned Ceylon Petroleum Corporation is approximately £572 million in debt, adding, as a result, no country or organization in the world is prepared to provide fuel for us. That's a bit grim, isn't it?
It's horrific. It's horrific. It's it's the first, I suppose, the first bottle to fall in what I imagine will be many, many more emerging economies falling into very, very deep economic crisis. It's a whole host of factors. I mean, like, this is just one thing compounding another. The fact of the matter is that emerging market debt has exploded during the pandemic, as governments have had to borrow significant amounts of money in order just to get through the economic crises that the pandemic has triggered. A lot of us in the North, the global North, the rich advanced economies, we forget that when we have lockdowns in our respective countries, those lockdowns have effects all along the supply chain, and they are particularly brutal for the kind of commodity providers in the global South. These countries don't have the fiscal and monetary firepower that countries in the North do. So they have been more or less hanging on by a thread, and the recent war in Ukraine, and arguably more importantly, the backfiring sanctions by the US, the UK, the EU, have just been absolutely destructive for countries. I mean, like, just as where you, if you have somebody who is living kind of hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, the moment inflation reaches 10-15%, they're starting to say, what do we have to stop buying in order to be able to survive? The same thing happens kind of like on a macro level for these economies. And according to the UN Trade and Development Commission, the UNCTAD, there are 69 countries that it has identified, 25 in Africa, 25 in Asia, 19 in Latin America, that are suffering like three twin crises right now, which are rising food prices, rising energy prices, and tightening financing conditions. Mm-hmm. And this is the fundamental, tightening financing conditions. So, I mean, I've as you said at the beginning of the show, my one of my main areas of specialization is Latin America. Mm-hmm. And we've seen examples in particularly in Brazil, but also in Mexico, in order for them to try to keep their currencies at a reasonable level against the dollar, they've been hiking rates month after month. And this is not so much to keep inflation at bay, it's to keep their currencies at a reasonable level. And inflation keeps rising in these countries. So, I mean, like Brazil, and each time you're raising interest rates, you're putting more pressures on businesses, you're putting more pressures on anybody who has debt in any shape or form. And when these businesses and consumers are already kind of struggling, then it's again another compounding factor.
It's the boa constrictor versus the cobra. All right, you know, a cobra zaps you, 15 seconds later you've got that toxin in you, the neurotoxin, then you're dead, end of story. It's quick, It's nasty, but it's quick and it's over with. Boa constrictor gets you, it wraps itself around you, starts to put on the squeeze. You exhale, it squeezes a little bit harder. You can't inhale. You exhale, it squeezes a little bit harder. It's a longer, more prolonged, you know, nasty way to go. And it feeds in, you know, we're talking Sri Lanka, but you highlighted that there's at least 69 other countries out there that have been identified under this three-pronged stress, you know, financial stress, fuel crisis, et cetera, inflationary pressures. And you mentioned bottles are, you know, the domino effects. Something has, somewhere has to be the first country or principality to fall. Sadly, we're talking about Sri Lanka today. They happen to be the first one that's openly reporting complete economic collapse. Kaput, pish, gone. Okay, it's not like it's in a bad way. It is collapsed, and it's collapsed completely. So there's other countries, 69 of which potentially could be following suit in short order. And this is a controlled demolition. That's another term that I'm sure you're aware of and that's very applicable. A controlled demolition of society, the economy, people's health. It's happening incrementally, because when it happens incrementally, you just don't get it so quickly until it's too late, or it's past the point of no return. And it's the same, like we've talked about Sri Lanka for months, highlighted it for months. It hadn't happened at that point in January, in February, in March, in April, in May, in June. But here we are in the cusp of July, and bang, down it goes. So these 69 countries that you reference from an external source, by the way, it's not something that you've dreamt up. This is from analysis that's been done. We will absolutely be talking about some of those countries, sadly, before the end of this year. How many, I do not know, but we Sri Lanka will not be the only casualty here. And, you know, Latin America, you know, I did see there were a lot of ructions in Ecuador over the last week. Can you give us an update on that? Are you following Ecuador specifically? I know you mentioned Brazil and some other places, Mexico. What's the crack in Ecuador?
Lots of indigenous risings. The prime minister, I think it is, of Ecuador, maybe the president, Lasso, is right wing. So he's, for the first time in 20 years, you have kind of like the classic neoliberal head of state in Ecuador, and he is delivering classic austerity medicine. Is not going down very well among the populace. The populace is complaining about especially fuel prices and food prices. They are hitting, you know, the streets. They are rioting. They are protesting in a very large way. It's not the only country that's doing that in Latin America. Peru has seen a lot of social protest of late. And Colombia, we just saw the first ever left-wing government voted into power. I mean, ever in 200 years of history. So that is, you know, there's a lot happening in Latin America. Interestingly, as Colombia is being kind of like the, it's almost like the Israel of Latin America for the United States. It's where the U.S. has 7 or 8 military bases, depending on who you ask. It's where the US has its kind of like foothold most firmly established in South America. So the fact that you have a left-wing government coming to power is important. We just don't know to what extent this government will be able to, what should we say, follow an independent policy course without US interference. I mean, I think that in Latin America is very interesting, because China has become a very important trading partner in Latin America over the last 20 odd years. Its trade has increased something staggering, like almost like 20-fold in that period. And it's now literally challenging the US in its, as the US likes to call it, its backyard. So there's a lot happening in that region. I would also urge people to keep an eye on Pakistan. Pakistan has been going through a political crisis for the last few months, and it has something like $36 billion of debt it needs to access very, very quickly. So, you know, these things can ricochet against neighbors or within particular regions. I would also recommend that your listeners keep a very close eye on Turkey as well. Turkey, I think, is very fragile. It's got 70-odd% inflation. Yeah. Its whole economic model is totally unsustainable. And the only reason I would argue that it's still in the position it is in is because of its hugely important role geopolitically between the East and the West, and the way Erdogan has been able to kind of play one off against the other with pretty impressive skill up to now. But I would certainly not be surprised if Turkey, we were beginning to see a financial crisis develop there. So it's, yes, you see, there's a lot happening.
All right, I'm going to pause there, and I want to comment on your comment when we come back with another real quick break to take. This is TNT Radio, and I'm very happy to be joined by Nick Corbisley, who's giving us a rundown in areas that we maybe aren't aware of, that there's even anything going on in the world, which is why we're doing this, to give people the bigger picture on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
In this midterm election season, the establishment legacy media is very focused on what they call the big lie. To them, the big lie is not that COVID vaccines are safe and effective, or that NATO is fighting to save democracy in Ukraine. Oh no, the big lie to them is that Trump actually won the 2020 presidential election. For elections that have been called so far this primary season, 105 candidates who outright dispute the result of the 2020 election and 42 candidates who have questioned the results have won the Republican nomination out of 284 nominees in total. This means that 52% of the GOP nominees so far endorsed the so-called big lie in some way. But maybe it's the other way around, and there is evidence of widespread electoral fraud. I'll let you be the judge. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
What if you were wearing something sexy? What if you were drinking? What if you made the first move? No matter what, sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, reminding you it's never your fault.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Democracy in Action. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Okay, a few countries were thrown out there to keep an eye on by Nick before the break. And, you know, to be honest, they're not very exotic places. They're not very sexy places when it comes to geopolitics and people's knowledge of them. We tend to focus on our own sphere, which is the UK and Ireland or Europe or North America, parts of South America. You know, you tend to focus on where you're located without looking outside of that and realizing that there's a lot of other factors that if they come into play will affect you in your sphere. Okay. So you mentioned Turkey. As you say, inflationary rates are 70% at the moment and climbing. So if you think it's bad, the reported rates in the UK are 10%, 12% at the minute, 10% in America. These figures are inaccurate anyway. They don't factor in things like utilities prices, the prices of oil, which has doubled and in some cases tripled. My home fuel, heating oil, has went up by 500% in the last 18 months. So don't talk to me about 8 to 10% inflation when, you know, the stuff that I'm putting in my tank to keep my house warm is going through the roof, or diesel at the pumps is literally going up on a daily basis by a few pence per day, a few percentage points per day it's increasing by. So Turkey, very delicate place indeed. A lot of people living there. Pakistan, again, a lot of turmoil and skullduggery going on there on a political level that will have a knock-on effect financially. And of course, that will spill out into Europe. What if there's a refugee crisis there? What if it's the same with Turkey? They've got no food. They need to run somewhere. They're not going to go to Syria. They're going to start heading west. Okay, they're going to start heading towards where we are, sitting around our little comfort zones, comparatively speaking to other places in the world. So you need to be au fait with what's happening elsewhere. You also mentioned Colombia. I have a good friend living there who you may know, Tim Hinchliffe. He writes, edits the Sociable website. Tim lives on a little village in the Andy Mountains. He doesn't even have a phone, but he does his work down there. He lives in the Pablo Escobar's back garden in Medellin in Colombia. I had him on the show this week. We had a very good conversation this week. But he keeps me up to speed with what's going on down there too. And you're doing the same. You're advising people, listen, watch here, watch there, keep an eye on it because it could have a knock-on effect on you. Let's talk about knock-on effects for the last 10 minutes. Aside from who's winning, who's losing, what's right and what's wrong in Ukraine, undoubtedly, the ruble, Russia have done well from EU or NATO sanctions. They've done well. And initially, Biden cheered or mumbled when he saw the ruble drop. Then it came back and started climbing, and then it hit its pre-invasion level. Now it's as strong as it's been in many a year. Russia's doing quite well out of all this. Plus, they're winning, if you want to call it a victory, they're winning the land war in Ukraine also, despite the billions and billions and billions that's been pumped into that black hole through Zelensky. Okay, so what, you might ask? What's that got to do with me? I'm not worried about that. There's a lot of food and a lot of grain supplied to North Africa and supplied to Europe from Russia, as well as energy and Ukraine. And there are a lot of 22 million tons, I believe, of grain sitting in Ukrainian silos that isn't getting out of the country. So if it's not getting out of the country, it means it's not going into shops, and it's not being bought, and it's not being consumed. When this crisis hits, this food shortage crisis, which will be exacerbated by the lack of diesel fuel to power the trucks that will deliver the stuff to places, should it get out of the ports, will it be a swift hit like a cobra strike? I think it will, rather than a slow squeeze. When it hits, I mean, it'll catch a lot of people unawares. I think it'll be all of a sudden, hey, we're out of stock. When are you getting it back? We don't know. And then you'll have the panic buying, which will exacerbate it further, which will put the prices up further. Can you see that coming anytime in the next few months?
I mean, like, timing is an impossible thing. There's one thing I don't like doing is trying to say when something is going to happen, unless there's something with a fixed date. I think that it's like the quote from Hemingway, the famous quote from Hemingway, "How did you go bankrupt?" It was slowly and then all of a sudden. I paraphrase, I don't remember the exact quote, but this describes many processes. I think that when countries go bankrupt, it's very similar. It's something that governments will probably hide the true nature of their finances from most of the people, including some people in government, until it's no longer feasible, and then suddenly the thing comes crashing down, as we've seen with Sri Lanka. I think that we had a taste of this in about 10, 11 years ago with the Arab Spring, particularly in Egypt and also in Tunisia, where food shortages and food price rises, they begin little by little, and then suddenly, bam, it's just there isn't enough food. And it's not long between that and the moment when people hit the streets. If there's one thing we've learned from history, food, the moment you stop being able to provide food, governments are at very real risk of kind of like revolution. Or something similar. And I think that that is something that we should be keeping a very close eye on over the coming months. And North Africa is a very clear area of risk because of their economic situation and also because of their massive dependence on grains from Russia and Ukraine. And it's not just grains, we're talking about fertilizer as well. Fertilizer, Russia is a massive exporter of fertilizer, and ever, you know, since the sanctions, other major, major food growers like Brazil, for example, that are hugely dependent on Russian fertilizer are suddenly having trouble, you know, growing the food that we buy around the world. So it's these chains and these knock-on effects that are impossible to really predict how they will fall out. But it's, we have unleashed the mother of all storms. When I say we, obviously not you or I, but the people in control of the governments in which we live.
Yeah. Put it like this. I despite how depressing I do sound and how much doom I do spew, I actually do still err on the side of caution. So my predictions, as grim as they may be, I'm still holding back a little bit because I might get it wrong. And don't take what I say as gospel, by the way. These are only my opinions based on the people that I talk to and the research that I'm doing and following. I'm a big believer in following trajectories. You know, there's graph analysis happening in the world for a reason. You know, there's usually patterns form and cycles form and things are cyclical. So while we can't predict dates, you know, that quote, you didn't get it exactly, and I'm going to look it up and use it myself, but, you know, you didn't go bankrupt. You went bankrupt slowly and then it happened all of a sudden. That's almost like the Sri Lanka thing. We've been talking about it for months. It's been teetering, and then bang, down it goes. The PM just comes out and says, we're bust. That's it. It's over. People say, what, did that happen overnight? No, it happened over a period of time. So the same thing with our fuel prices. Spain's probably not too different than the UK. I watched Christmas 2020, the fuel price was about 110 a litre for diesel. It crept up slowly to 140, which was its previous high over the last 5 to 10 years. And then it jumped to 170. And I thought to myself, if this keeps going, it will really run at £2 a litre by the summer. And yesterday, last night, specifically, my local Tesco fuel station, which is the cheapest in the area, it hit £2 per litre. I think there's momentum with this now, and I feel there'll be a run higher to another 50% minimum by Christmas, which will be absolutely catastrophic. And I'm underestimating that, by the way, and I might have it wrong, but the trajectory is not looking good, given what's happening in the world. So again, it goes back to that business of trying to prepare as best you can, you know. And we mentioned earlier on, what's the strategy? People may be thinking, well, Nick, what are we supposed to do? Rick, what do I do? Just be realistic with your own personal finances and your own setup. If you're flush and you can afford to go out for dinner every night or travel overseas and jet around the world and take holidays and still have enough left over for the rainy days, well, then you just continue doing that. If you're looking at your balance sheet or your bank account and you're going, well, you know, I'd like a break. I'd like to get away somewhere, but it's going to cost me £2,000. Can we afford it? Yeah, we can afford it. But what if things go horribly south with the economy and food? Well, we're going to find it tight. You might want to rethink that, or you might want to go so far away. You might want to stay closer to home or reduce your stay. Again, balance, right? You gotta keep yourself sane. You can't be living in solitary confinement, but you have to be sensible with your own finances as well. So in light of what Nick's been saying and in light of what I've been saying, you know, balance, people, balance, you know, assess your own finances, assess your own mental health, and, you know, adjust accordingly. Is that a reasonable summary as we come up to time here? Balance and adjustments, little balance adjustments here and there, that'll get us through this somehow.
Absolutely. And where I get a little bit of, what's the word, relief, I suppose, or comfort. Yeah, comfort is the word, is from knowing that the world has been through these sorts of experiences before. Ourselves may not have, but generations before have, and they've come out the other end. It's important, this is why I say it's important to be informed, it's important to understand what has happened before. It's also, if you want to know what to do, my advice is to look at what countries that have been through serious economic crisis, how the people there reacted, how they were able to navigate those storms. So, I mean, I look at Russia in the 1990s, look at Mexico in the tequila crisis, look at Brazil. You know, we don't have that experience. We've kind of been living nice and easy for a number of generations. Yeah. But other countries have been through the kind of eye of the storm, and there have been learning experiences from that. So read about that. That's what I recommend. And
that's positive, by the way. That's a positive reading assignment, by the way, from Nick, rather than, you know, an immersion in geopolitics that could drive us looper. We could look back on people that have weathered the storms and have survived crises in the past and look to them, I suppose you could say, for a little bit of inspiration. And you know what? Let's finish on a high. Let's finish on a high and say, listen, it's not over until the fat lady sings. As the saying goes, it's not over yet. There could be pain and suffering ahead, but we could grasp that victory and knock them clean out of their shoes. Time will tell. One day at a time, balance and adjustments. Nick Corbishley, it's been a pleasure to see you and talk to you again and again. I thank you for rising up like Lazarus from that tomb or sick bed of yours and gracing us with your presence today. Thank you, my friend. We'll be in touch. Hopefully you'll be back on again sooner rather than later. I'm Rick Bunn. I'll be joined after the break by Matt Izzo.